All right, I will invite your attention this evening to the book of the Judges in chapter number 16 as we continue our study on the book of Judges. Particularly, we have been looking at the life of Samson for the last few weeks, and Lord willing, we'll look at him again tonight and probably next Sunday evening as well. Let me remind you of this one simple thought. Etched on the tombstone where Samson's body would lie could be these simple words: what might have been. What might have been. And again, as I have studied this and prayed and thought, Lord, don't let me be overly critical, overly harsh, or it's easy to do. But I'm also reminded of this simple truth. None of us are beyond sin. Everyone in this building could fall into sin just like Samson has. Every one of us. And don't think too highly of yourself, or I shouldn't think too highly of myself, for the sin that befell him could befall any of us, and if not that, some other sin. And so we need to be cautious, unless we be overly critical, but also learn what God would have to say, this warning that God would have for us from His words. These things are given to us. New Testament says that Old Testament is given to us as an example that we may learn from it, that we may know what's right, what's wrong, and what we should do and what we should not do. In Judges 16, let's read a little bit more about the life of Samson. We'll not tackle all of this chapter this evening, but we'll tackle the first 20, 21 verses or so. In Judges chapter 16, we read, "Then went Samson to Gaza, or to Gaza, and saw there an harlot, and went in unto her. And it was told the Gazites, saying, Samson is come hither, and they compassed him in, and laid wait for him all night in the gate of the city, and were quiet all the night, saying, In the morning, when it is day, we shall kill him. And Samson lay till midnight, and arose at midnight, and took the doors of the gate of the city, and the two posts, and went away with them, bar and all, and put them upon his shoulders, and carried them up to the top of a hill that is before Hebron. And it came to pass afterward that he loved a woman in the valley of Soreh, whose name was Delilah. And the lords of the Philistines came up unto her, and said unto her, Entice him, and see wherein his great strength lieth, and by what means we may prevail against him, that we may bind him to afflict him. And we will give thee, every one of us, 1,100 pieces of silver. And Delilah said to Samson, Tell me, I pray thee, wherein thy great strength lieth, and wherewith thou mightest be bound to afflict thee. Samson said unto her, If they bind me with 7 green withs that were never dried, then shall I be weak and be as another man. The lords of the Philistines brought up to her 7 green withs which had not been dried, and she bound him with them. Now there were men lying in wait, abiding with her in the chamber, and she said unto him, The Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And he brake the withs as a thread of tow is broken when it touches the fire, so his strength was not known. Delilah said unto Samson, Behold, thou hast mocked me, and told me lies. Now tell me, I pray thee, wherewith thou mightest be bound. And he said unto her, If they bind me fast with new ropes that were never occupied, then shall I be weak and be as another man. Delilah therefore took new ropes, and bound him therewith, and said unto him, The Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And there were liers in wait abiding in the chamber, and he brake them from off his arms like a thread. And Delilah said unto Samson, Hitherto thou hast mocked me, and told me lies. Tell me wherewith thou mightest be bound. And he said unto her, Thou weavest the 7 locks of my head with the web. And she fastened it with a pin, and said unto him, The Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And he awakened out of his sleep and went away with the pin of the beam and with the web. She said unto him, How canst thou say, I love thee, when thine heart is not with me? Thou hast mocked me these three times and hast not told me wherein thy great strength lieth. And it came to pass when she pressed him daily with her words and urged him so that his soul was vexed unto death, that he told her all his heart and said unto her, There hath not come a razor upon mine head, for I've been a Nazarite unto God from my mother's womb. If I be shaven, then my strength will go from me, and I shall become weak and be like any other man. And when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called for the lords of the Philistines, saying, Come up this once, for he has showed me all his heart. And then the lords of the Philistines came up unto her and brought money in their hand. She made him sleep upon her knees. She called for a man, and she caused him to shave off the seven locks of his head, and she began to afflict him, and his strength went from him. And she said, The Philistines be upon thee, Samson. And he awoke out of his sleep and said, I will go out as other times before and shake myself. And he wist not that the Lord was departed from him. But the Philistines took him and put out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza and bound him with fetters of brass, and he did grind in the prison house. Howbeit, the hair of his head began to grow again after he was shaven. When disobedience catches up to you. If I were to try to supplant a thought into your mind from this text this evening, it would be that. What happens when continued rebellion catches up to you? I often try to begin sermons with an illustration. I probably spend too much time trying to find illustrations that will serve as a parable or to help you understand what I believe the narrative is teaching. And I spent some time looking for an illustration that could help paint the portrait that I believe this text is saying for us. But then I began to think, there is no better illustration than the life of Samson itself. There's the storyline. Look what happened to Samson. I don't need to come up with some vivid, glowing illustration. All you have to do is look at Samson and see what happened to him. And if you'll take note of that, you'll get the lesson. In this chapter, Samson's strength and weakness is yet again on vivid display. The events that befall him show us clearly the results of his stubbornness and his rebellion. If you will remember, the close of the previous chapter tells us that Samson judged Israel for 20 years. And in particular, Samson fought against the Philistines for 20 years. You remember me saying this, that I'm going to say almost always, in fact it may be always, but I would have to check it out, that when we studied the other judges, it would tell us that they served the Lord this many years and they died. But in this case, in Samson's case, we read that Samson did this and this and he judged 20 years, but now we're going to hear about what leads up to his death. The events in chapter 16 that lead up to it. And I closed last week with this thought, that it appears to me, based on what we've learned about Samson earlier, and then now as we see him, probably, listen to this, Samson is probably in his 40s, maybe a little bit older, but probably in his 40s. That's the best guess of theologians based on a lot of old history. But maybe in his 40s or 50s, but as we enter into chapter 16. So he's still a relatively young man, but we know he's almost at the end of his life. He doesn't know that, but we know that. And it appears that he ended his life battling and struggling with the same temptation that he had been fighting for 20 years or more. And that doesn't mean that he's not a believer. One of the things I remind myself as I study these narratives and I look at and dissect the life of Bible characters is that God is pleased to use broken vessels. And I've said this before because that's what all God has to work with. And that's all we are, is broken vessels. And Samson is such a one. He still makes it to Hebrews 11. And listen, as hard as we've been on Samson, he still makes it into Hebrews 11 in that Hall of Faith. And Louis Tiger's name's not there and wouldn't be there. So, I'm glad my life's not on record like his is, because there would be a lot of preachers that could really pin me down doing too. But Samson's disobedience will catch up to him. And I think if you'll follow me this evening, you'll see that I mentioned this. I really think that Samson had a little bit of pride about him. Proud in his looks, his physique, his strength, his accomplishments. Proud in all the things that he could do, and I think that'll catch up to him as well. But in the first verse, we see that Samson goes down to Gaza. Gaza is one of the capital cities of the Philistines, one of the five capital cities of the Philistines. It is actually land that Israel should own, but they never did capture it under the time of Joshua. The people of Israel, that was part of the promised land, part of Canaan that God had bequeathed them, given to them in the divine land grant, but they never were able to drive out the enemies. And they could have had they availed themselves of the power of God, but they did not. And so the Philistines become a long-standing thorn in the flesh for Israel. And Gaza is probably the furthest city away from Samson's homeland. So if we were to read in anything in that, it's to him to say, he ain't afraid of anything. He'll go as far down into the enemy's territory in their capital city as he wants to go. He's not worried about them. But when he gets there, after battling them for the last 20 years, he's still a man of strength and vigor. What does he do when he arrives in the city? And there's no other way to say it than he hires a prostitute. He goes into a harlot. In the Hebrew vernacular, there are two separate words used for a harlot or a prostitute. One speaks of, and it's hard for us to believe this, but there were women who would sell themselves as a service to the pagan gods of the time, that literally prostitution was condoned by pagan idolatry, and so there was one Hebrew word that directed to them, but this particular Hebrew word just speaks of a common prostitute. Samson went in and hired a woman to share herself with him. And you say, well, that's plain preaching. Well, it's what happened. You know, that's one of the great things about God's Word. It don't hide anything. It just tells it like it is. Samson was a man was subject to like passions as all men. And this may sound so silly. My wife probably going to kill me later after this. But being ugly and fat and out of shape is a blessing. I don't have to fight off all them women like Samson did, you know? I'm just cutting up. But you know what I'm saying? With a man of his strength, vigor, physique, probably a man of good looks. He had trouble with the women. Now, you say anything you want to say, Samson had trouble with the women. This man who had superhuman strength had a real weakness. And that was he loved the ladies. You know, I know that sex and these things are sort of a taboo subject, but the Bible talks very plainly about it, so we ought not hide in the corner. This is the real life. This is the life we live in. And it, it, comes to find out Samson's in town. Verse number 2. And it was told the people of the city, the Gazites, saying, Samson's here, Samson's in town. And they compassed him in and laid wait for him all night in the gate of the city. And if you will allow some sanctified imagination, I can almost hear the men of the city, those soldiers there of Gaza, saying, well, we know where he is. He's there in that prostitute's house. Why don't you go get it? And the other ones probably say, no, no, why don't you go get it? And the other ones say, no, no, you go get it. And they thought, who wants to tangle with Samson? It has not worked out for any of them well so far. So it's almost like they put their heads together and say, you know what? Let's just wait till daylight and then we'll tackle them all together. You know, all of us will work together. That's verse 2. They compassed him in, laid in wait for him all night. They were quiet all night. You see how the text tells us that? Saying in the morning, when it's daylight, then we shall kill him. But Samson laid there after doing what he had hired this woman to do. He laid there until about midnight, and then he gets up to leave. He's not concerned about these men who are lying in wait. In fact, he's so bold that he goes to the gate of the city. Now, you read this narrative, and I don't know that I can do it justice, but we read this narrative, and you need to try to picture this. He goes to the gate of this capital city of the Philistines, a gate that's probably, we're told, 20 feet high, 2 stories high. And he rips the doors off the posts. And he lifts them. At midnight, he takes the doors of the gate of the city and the 2 posts, I'm reading from verse 3, and he carries them, and notice, bar and all. So it's like he rips the doors plumb off the hinges. He takes the posts that were there, the door posts that were mounted to make the door secure, and the bar that they would run across the back of it to secure it from being open. And he lifts all that up, puts it on his shoulders, and carries it off. Now that's a pretty strong dude right there. Solid wood, probably thick in order to stop battering rams. Some commentators would say that it would be overlaid in metal to stop the battering rams or fire from them trying to burn it down. So hundreds of pounds, at least conservatively, hundreds of pounds, he picks them up, puts them on his shoulders. Just go home and Google that, and it'll give you a good picture of that, if you will do. Look at some images of it. Not that they know, but it just helped paint a picture for me. And notice this. I wouldn't know this if I wasn't studying this. But the close of verse number 3 says, he puts them upon his shoulders and he carries them to the top of a hill that is before Hebron. 40 miles. 40 miles he carried them gates. That'd been one thing if he carried them outside the city and stuck them on a hill. But he carried them 38 to 40 miles to a hill that is before the city of Hebron and then shoves them down on the ground. He is taunting the Philistines. You think you have me fenced in? I just take the gate of your city, throw it on my shoulder, and I'll carry it 40 miles and drop it. Listen, I go to the gym, trying to get back to the gym, 3 miles on the treadmill. With just me is all about all I can handle, let alone carrying hundreds of pounds of the gates of the city, the bar, the doorpost, 40 miles and sets them down. But then, Samson has trouble again, verse 4. And it came to pass afterward that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek whose name was Delilah. Delilah is a temptress. There's no other way to say it. That's what she is. And she did a fabulous job of tempting Samson. He falls in love, if you will, and I think probably some of the commentators are right when they say it's more about lust than it ever was about love. But he falls in love, or so he felt that way, whatever you want to say, for this woman whose name was Delilah. And now the Philistines see an opportunity. They can't overpower his strength, but they can appeal to his weakness. And so they reach out to Delilah, the five lords. There's five capitals of the Philistines. There's five governors or whatever you want to call them, five lords of the Philistines. They come to her and they say to her, "We know that he's crazy about you. We know that he's got feelings for you, whatever. And we want you to find out what makes him tick. What makes Samson Samson? Where is the secret of his strength?" And they appeal to her flesh by saying to her, "We'll pay you good money if you'll find out." In fact, it is an astronomical figure that they offer her. If you see at the close, verse 5, "And we will give thee," notice these words, "every one of us, all five of them, will give you 1,100 pieces of silver." 5,500 pieces of silver. This is an astronomical price. So that tells us that Samson is on the Philistines' most wanted list. He is at the top of the most wanted list. They want him dead, and they're willing to pay good money for it. $5,500 dead or pieces of silver, dead or alive. And so Delilah, then, the temptress, she turns to Samson, and of all the things that I struggle to understand about this back and forth that goes on between Samson and Delilah is I don't understand Samson. "Man, can't you see that woman? She ain't nothing but trouble." I mean, when you read the narrative, and I'm going to try to emphasize some of this to you as we go, she is hands-on involved in trying to cause him trouble, trying to sell him over to the Philistines. And you know, I don't know, they say love is blind, but I guess it makes it pretty stupid too. I don't know what's wrong with him. I mean, this woman is nothing but trouble. I can't help but think, and again, I don't want to be overly harsh, but I can't help but think is it is Samson's pride. It's just his pride that thinks he can tease the Philistines and he can toy with Delilah and get away with it. And if you'll see and if you'll notice this, she says to him, she's not coy about it. She says, "Samson, tell me, where does your strength come from?" Verse 6. "Where does your great strength lie? Tell me how you could be bound and afflicted." Why would the man ever answer that, even if it was a lie? Right? I mean, if it's not a little bit of arrogance on Samson's part, him thinking, "I can overpower Philistines and I can overpower her," whatever it is, and him saying, he gives her answers again and again. In fact, four answers. Fourth is finally the truth. Why do this? And it's simply the blinding power of our own pride and our own sin. Why do people who have been broken by addiction continue to battle with it again and again and again? It's the blinding power of sin. Why is it that when we struggle with some temptation, with something that we know is going to lead us to trouble, that it has caused us trouble before, why do we do it? Because there is a blinding power to sin. Not to be trifled with and toyed with like Samson. Samson is toying with his own destruction. She says to him in a very straightforward manner, "You know, tell me what I can do to bind you, handcuff you, if you will, that then we can torture you or afflict you." And he replies by saying in verse number 7, "If I'm bound with seven green withes," and there's some argument back and forth, I'll give you what I think the greater idea, and it is some of the muscle strands or from an animal. It is the strings or innards of an animal, what we grew up calling innards. I don't know if that's a Georgia word, but that's some of the inner strands. If you've ever gutted an animal, you know what I'm talking about. Some of the strings or the sinew of it, that it is bound together. And it may be, maybe some people said it was vines or plants, but either way, it doesn't make a whole lot of difference. But Samson says to her, if I'm bound with seven of them that have never been used, never been dried, then I become weak. If you bind my hands with these things, then I become weak. And so, I want you to notice this. Verse number 8 says, then the lords of the Philistines brought up to her these seven green withes which had not been dried, and she bound him. Do you see those words? She. And you're going to see that again and again. And she bound him with them. And now there's already men lying in wait. So we get the idea that Samson's laying there taking him an afternoon nap, right? Or it's late at night, whatever the case is. There are men lying in wait. She binds him and she says, the Philistines be here, Samson. The Philistines are here to kill you. And he stands up, and apparently he just has to do no more than just pop his hands like that, and it's just as if it's a tiny piece of thread that's got him bound. It will not hold him. In fact, to close verse 9, and he break the whist as a thread of tow is broken when it touches the fire. Just a piece of thread, something very simple. So it did not reveal his strength was not known. And then second time, and Delilah says unto him, you just mocked me. You've told me lies. Tell me. I don't know how long this is drags out, whether it's a matter of days or weeks. We're certainly not told in every detail. But she says, I want to know, where does your strength lie? Let me, that you can be bound. And Samson again says to her, and I don't know why. Why is he doing this? Why do we continue to battle with some of the things we do so many years later? But verse 11, he says unto her, this is the second time now, if you bind me with new ropes. Well, you know, that didn't work the last time they tried to bind Samson. It's not going to work this time either. But he says to her, if you bind me with new ropes that have never been used, then I'll be weak like another man. And notice verse 12. Delilah, therefore, took new ropes and bound him therewith. And then she says, Samson, the Philistines are on you. And he jumps up and he just snaps them right off and sort of shakes himself. And you can imagine the Philistine soldiers running for high ground. I mean, they want to get out of there. And you would think at some point, you would say, Samson, you tell her this. And the next thing you know, you wake up and you bound up. Right? I mean, you would think it would dawn on him that you can't be messing around with this girl. She's going to hurt you. Just as much as you think it would dawn on us at some point that the things that we continue to fail in and the temptations that we struggle with, you think it would dawn on us to stop. But so often we continue to yield. And I understand the blinding power of sin, but from just a human side, I'd be like, Samson, I mean, you know, you say seven green whiffs, the next thing you know, you got seven, you tell her two new ropes, you got two. This woman here, I mean, she means to harm you, buddy. What is it other than perhaps his own pride that would allow him to keep on playing and toying with her? Verse 13, Delilah says unto Samson, you've mocked me, you've told me lies. Now tell me, how can you be bound? And he says, if you weave my hair together, if you braid my hair, if you will, and then you fasten it with a certain locks of my head with this pin, then I'll become weak. And he's getting closer now, right, to actually revealing the source by saying it is in his hair. They had no idea, no understanding of this. And so again, verse 14 is, she fastened his hair with a pin. And then she says, Samson, the Philistines be on you. And he waked out of sleep and went away with a pin of the beam and with a web, whatever. Perhaps she had fastened him to something with the locks of his hair, and he just broke that off and left with that. And in verse 15, it says, and she said unto him, you don't love me. Samson's already heard this before from another Philistine woman, the one he said called his heifer. She says, Delilah, you don't love me. You don't love me. If you loved me, you wouldn't do this to me. If you really cared about me, you would tell me, you would let me know, you would reveal to me, verse 15, How can you say you love me when your heart is not with me? And now the strong man is getting weak, as if he's not been broken enough. He is now nearing the point of revealing to her the true source. You've mocked me, verse 15, these three times. And whether this is plays out over a matter of days or she lets it lay a little while and then ask him again, we don't know, but she begins to press him. Tell me, where does your strength lie? Look at verse 16. And it came to pass when she pressed him daily with her words. Temptation is a daily battle. A daily battle. The temptress, whatever it is, and for Samson it was women. I don't know what it may be for you, but it is. We all have some measure of sin, the sin that does so easily beset us, and it is a daily battle, a moment by moment battle. And if we don't gain the victory through the power of the Spirit, and see, every time we cave in, it grieves the Spirit. And we read before about Samson and Spirit coming mightily upon Samson and giving him supernatural strength, but we haven't read that in this chapter. Samson's continued rebellion leads to a grieving of the Spirit. Now he's weak. And she presses him daily with her words. She urges him, pleads with him. At the close of verse number 16, so that his soul was vexed unto death, just miserable because of her constant badgering and constantly putting this guilt trip on him. What happens if you play with fire long enough? You get burnt. In verse 17, this is what happens. And he told her all his heart. He reveals it. This Superman who can carry hundreds of pounds for 40 miles is weak as water when it comes to women. He tells her all his heart and he says unto her, there's not been a razor on my head, never had a haircut, I've been a Nazarite from my mother's womb. If my hair is shaven, my strength will go from me and I'll become weak just like any other man. Now he has the proverbial let the cat out of the bag. He's finally told her the truth. And you need to understand that there's really nothing magical about Samson's hair. Right? I mean, there was really nothing supernatural about the man's hair. It was just a symbol of his dedication and separation to God. Do you remember what the Nazarite vows were? There were three things in particular. Number one, he was not to partake of any of the fruit of the vine in any way. He's broken that Nazarite vow. We know at his wedding feast, a wedding that never really happened, he became drunk there and abused alcohol. Secondly, he's not to come in contact with a dead body. He did that by reaching into the carcass of the lion. He came in contact with a dead body. The third is his hair is never to be cut. That's the Nazarite vow. Again, they were normally voluntary and they were normally temporary, but this was a special calling by God upon Samson. And when Delilah cuts his hair, it is now the break or the breach of his final vow. The final vow has now been broken. This covenant, if you will. That's why I wanted to sing Trust and Obey, because there's no other way to be happy in Jesus. He did not trust. He did not obey. And this Old Testament believer, as strong as he was, became weak like any other man. She, verse number 18, and when Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called for the lords of the Philistines. She says, boy, she sent word out to the five capitals, and I know I've been telling y'all that I've got the secret, but this time I've really got it. Y'all come back into town and bring your checkbook with you. Bring your money with you, because I know what it is this time.
He showed me all his heart in verse 18. Then the lords of the Philistines came up unto her and brought money in their hand. And notice these words again in verse 19. And she made him to sleep upon her knees. Man, you'd think by now, Samson, the light bulb would go on, right? I mean, you would think by now, Samson, don't be messing with this girl, but it does. I'm telling you. I don't want to sound like I've arrived. I'm not arrived, and we are so easily misled, and so easily do we yield to sin. If you've ever been around somebody who just can't seem to break loose of something that's hanging on to them, it'll break your heart. Because you just say, can't you see what it's doing to your life? Can't you see it? Delilah, the temptress, causes him to lay his head down in her lap. My dad always said, if you lay your head down in the lap of the world, you're going to get hurt. Samson lays his head down in her lap, and she brings this man in to cut off those braids, those seven locks of his hair. And listen, look at verse 19. She caused him to shave off the seven locks, and she began to afflict him. And his strength went from him. And then Samson, not knowing, listen to these words, verse 20. And she said, the Philistines be upon you, Samson, just like she had done before. The Philistines are here, Samson. And he says, what? I will go out as other times and shake myself. Apparently, that's all he had to do was go out there and flex his muscles, and the Philistines would go running for cover. But the close of verse 20 are some of the saddest words in all of the Bible. He wist not. That's our King James way of saying he didn't know. He did not know that the Lord was departed from him. That doesn't mean he lost his salvation. That just means that supernatural strength was gone. It just means that special anointing that God had put on him was gone. And these are some sad words when the Lord departs from you, when you have been set apart as He was to be used in a mighty way to be a help unto others. But because of your continued rebellion, it grieves the Spirit. And when you finally, it is the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back, when he finally yielded and gave in, that last little bit of separation and dedication, the power of God left his life just like that. And he didn't know it. And that's sad, he didn't know it. He thought he could get up and he's just going to go out there and just flex his little muscles and pop his pecs and everybody go running. But that ain't what happened. Let me read something to you. You'll be familiar with it. It's a familiar proverb, but I made an allusion to it here just a moment ago. Proverbs chapter 6. I'm going to read a couple verses. Proverbs 6, verse 27. The preacher asked a couple of questions. Proverbs 6, 27. Can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Can one go upon hot coals and his feet not be burned? There it is. You can't take fire into your bosom and not get burned. Samson, you can't keep toying with sin and then not catch up to you. R.G. Lee, and I don't know how many of you may know this or have ever listened. If you've never heard R.G. Lee preach Payday Sunday, if you get on the internet, you can listen to it. Y'all go listen to it. R.G. Lee preached this sermon over a thousand times. Payday Sunday. In this case, he was talking about Ahab and Jezebel and how payday caught up to them. But payday came for Samson as well. This child of God, who had the Holy Spirit living within him, continued to rebel again and again until God withdrew His hand of protection from him and left him to his own strength, and it ruined him. You can't play with fire and not get burned. You can't walk on hot coals and your feet not be burned. You can't lay your head down in Delilah's lap and it not lead to your own hurt. Listen, child of God. Listen, oh sinner. You can't toy with sin. You can't play with the enemy of your soul. It'll destroy you. It destroyed him. Here it is. And it shouldn't surprise us, should it? It shouldn't surprise us. You cannot continue on in stubborn rebellion to God without it catching up to you. I don't know why, but I'm somewhat captivated by this, and perhaps it's a little bit gruesome, but I'll share this with you. There was a man by the name of Timothy Treadwell. Died a few years ago. He was a bear enthusiast. He loved nature, loved living out in the woods, would spend months on end living in Alaska. An environmentalist, a naturalist. He lived among grizzly bears for 13 years. And he kept pushing and kept pressing to see how close that he could get. Sometimes he would even pet the wild bears and even would tussle or play with the bear cubs. But in October of 2003, he and his girlfriend were camping near a river where salmon would run upriver. And in his mid-40s, his girlfriend, younger, both of them were mauled to death by a grizzly bear. They ended up, they found out about it, they shot and killed the bear and found evidence that this was the bear that had killed them. And you look at that, in fact, they even made a movie about his life, and you look at it and you say, well, yeah, I mean, yeah, right? I mean, you can't go messing around with grizzly bears eventually not get hurt. I mean, it's just a matter of time. You can't play around. It's going to happen. Samson, you can't keep messing around with Delilah. You're going to get hurt. Listen, old sinner, you can't keep toying with sin. Eventually, it will catch up to you. Rebellion, the stubborn refusal to do what God would have you do, will catch up to you. You play with fire, eventually you may be burned. You may be like this man who escaped for 13 years, but it caught up to him. Samson's life. You see him in verse 21. I want you to see him. From this mighty man of strength, man with an, I personally think, a man of size and girth and great physique, see where his stubborn rebellion led him in verse 21. And the Philistines took him and gouged out his eyes and brought him to Gaza. That's the same city where he ripped the gates up out and carried them off. They took him back into there and they made a mule out of him. You hear that? They put fetters of brass and he did grind in the prison house. They used to take animals. A donkey, if you will, ox, some other animal. And they would strap it to a grind mill and it would walk in circles. And it was strapped to him was a pole, and at the center of that there was this big grindstone, millstone, and they would put different types of wheat, barley, other things in there, and that animal would walk in circles, and it would grind. It would mill the harvest. That's exactly what they did to Samson. They bound him to a millstone. From this mighty, powerful man to being treated like an animal. Get these three words. Bound, blinded, broken. That's where sin will lead you. It will lead you to be bound, blinded, and broken. Too many good people that you know, that I know, continue to trifle with sin. until they wind up at a place like Samson. The life essentially over. Just a mere fragment of what they were. They put out his eyes. They bound him with fetters. He did grind in the prison house. And verse 22 offers just a hint of hope. We'll get into that some next week. But this is the ugly end of sin. When you go home tonight and you turn on the television and you see a commercial there that shows how wonderful alcohol is and what a great time friends have over a few Budweisers, they don't show you Samson bound, broken, and blinded by sin. They show you Samson and just like he's having a great time. It never shows you where it leads you. Friends, to your heart and to mine, I say, may God help us that we may have victory over sin and not end up. Listen, Samson made it. He made it to Hebrews 11. But what might it be? You live long enough yet to know some people that you could say what might have been? You have a loved one that you could say about them what might have been.